Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Are you also on Skype? No, you don't want to be Skype. We're on Skype. Okay. This is it. Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to have a special guest today. But I want to begin with what's going on out here in the world. Once again, I say this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. We have stunning developments in the Ukraine. A critical dam providing water to Crimea has been destroyed. The Nova Nekovka Dam, located in southern Ukraine on the Dnipro River, was destroyed Tuesday. Kiev and Moscow are accusing each other of the attack, but Russia is going to suffer the more. The dam was built by Russia during the 1950s by the USSR and on the front lines of the war in Ukraine. It is nearly 100 feet tall, over 10,000 feet wide. The dam was constructed as a hydroelectric power plant, creating a vast reservoir over 2,000 square kilometers, where Europe's largest nuclear power plant, the Zaporizhia, and the Crimean Peninsula receive water from the reservoir. An explosion reportedly ripped through the dam on Tuesday morning, causing flooding to begin downstream. It's unclear if the attack was intentional. Well, it may be at the moment of that reporting, but there's really no serious room for doubt. The most immediate impact is flooding surrounding areas, affecting at least 16,000 people. 8 towns have been partially or completely flooded. The region will suffer environmental damage from the flooding and tons of industrial lubricant used at the hydroelectric power plant. Another concern, of course, is the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant controlled by Russia. The reservoir provided cooling water. The IAEA, the UN's nuclear watchdog group, said it's closely monitoring the situation, but there's no imminent nuclear safety risk. Kiev immediately blamed Moscow for the attack, calling it a terrorist attack and war crime. Ukrainian President Zelensky claimed it was impossible for Ukrainians to carry out the dam's destruction. Russia has been controlling the dam and the entire area for more than a year. It's physically impossible it up from the outside by shelling. It was mined by the Russian occupiers, and they blew it up. There's every reason in the world to doubt that profoundly. Last year, for example, Ukrainian Major General Andriy Kuvichuk told the Washington Post he considered attacking the dam during Ukraine's counteroffensive last year. Kuvichuk considered flooding the river, the Post reported. The Ukrainians, he said, even conducted a test strike with a HIMARS launcher, making three holes in the middle to see if the Dnieper's water could be raised enough to stymie Russian crossing but not flood nearby villages. The test was a success, he claimed. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Ukrainian forces were behind the destruction of the dam. The president receives reports through the defense ministry and other services. We can already say unequivocally this was deliberate sabotage by the Ukrainian side. Remarkably enough, Tucker Carlson has just released his first episode of Tucker on Twitter on the explosion of the Kakhovka Dam in Ukraine. Tucker released episode one of Tucker on Twitter program. He took on the Ukrainian dam blown up on Tuesday, suggesting it was likely a Ukrainian attack. He started his program as follows. This morning, it looked like somebody blew up the Kakhovka Dam in southern Ukraine. The rushing wall of water wiped out entire villages, destroyed a critical hydropower plant, and as of tonight, puts the largest nuclear reactor in Europe in danger of melting down. So if this was intentional, it was not a military tactic. It was an act of terrorism. Then the question is, who did it? Well, let's see. The Kakhovka Dam was effectively Russian. It was built by the Russian government. It currently sits in Russian-controlled territory. The dam's reservoir provides water to Crimea, which has been for the last 240 years home of the Russian Black Sea Fleet. Blowing up the dam may be bad for Ukraine, but it hurts Russia more. And for precisely that reason, the Ukrainian government has considered destroying it in December. The Washington Post quoted a Ukrainian general saying his men had fired American-made rockets at the dam's floodgate as a test strike. So really, once the facts start coming in, it becomes much less of a mystery what might have happened to the dam. Any fair person would conclude Ukrainians probably blew it up, just as you would assume they blew up Nord Stream, the Russian natural gas pipeline, last fall. Actually, of course, we know from Seymour Hersh, it was the United States, where Victoria Nuland declared that if Russia were to intrude into Ukraine, Nord Stream would be no more. Even Biden made that declaration. So I'm a bit puzzled by that final observation. On the other hand, it's astounding. When Tucker was on Fox, he received around 3 million. On Twitter, he has 60 million views so far. 60 million. What do you think? Was this a good move for Tucker? Meanwhile, Information Liberation has laid out the reality of the situation. Ukraine had planned to bomb Novokarkara Dam as a last resort, conducted test strike last year, and blamed Russia. We're dealing with major liars, phonies, and frauds. Kherson counteroffensive Major General Andriy Kuvichuk told the Washington Post in December of 2022 that Ukraine has plans to bomb the Kakhovka Dam as a last resort and even conducted a test strike on the dam with American HIMARS, which they falsely blamed on the Russians. Here's Michael Tracy tweeting. Washington Post article from December 2022 said Ukraine conducted a test strike on the dam in preparation for its offensive in Kherson. A Washington Post. The two bridges were targeted with U.S.-supplied M142 high-mobility artillery rocket system, or HIMARS, launchers, which have a range of 50 miles, and were quickly rendered impassable. There were moments when we turned off their supply line completely and they still managed to build crossings. They managed to replenish ammunition. It was very difficult. Kuvichuk considered flooding the river. The Ukrainians, he said, even conducted a test strike with a HIMARS launcher on one of the floodgates on the dam, making three holes in the metal to see if the Dnieper water could be raised enough to stymie Russian crossing but not flood nearby villages. The test was a success, but the step remained a last resort. He held off. From Andrew Korioko on Zero Hedge, Kiev's long-term plans to blow up the dam. A partial destruction of the Kakhovka Dam on early Tuesday morning saw Kiev and Moscow exchange accusations about who's to blame. But a report from the Washington Post in late December extends credence to the Kremlin's version of events. Titled Inside the Ukrainian Counteroffensive That Shocked Putin and Reshaped the War, the journalist quoted former commander of November's Kherson Counteroffensive, Major General Andrei Kukhachuk, who shockingly admitted to planning this war crime. Ukraine struck the dam in November of 2022, but blamed Russia for the attack. You can see the tweet from November 2022 falsely blaming Russia, the three holes in the dam. Footage of the explosion that damaged the hydroelectric dam. We have one tweet. Here is another. It does seem that the Novokarkovka hydroelectric dam was damaged by the Russians in their retreat. A massive question of how significant the damage actually is. This is the earlier attack. Today, Ukraine is once again blaming Russia for the dam's destruction. Benjamin Pittet tweets, new planet satellite image show the unimaginable damage to the Novokarkovka dam. Russian terrorists. The destruction of the Kharkova hydroelectric power plant only confirms to the whole world they must be expelled from every corner of Ukrainian land, Zelensky said Tuesday. Not a single meter should be left to them because they use every meter for terror. It's only Ukraine's victory that will return security, and this victory will come. The terrorists will not be able to stop Ukraine with water, missiles, or anything else. All services are working. I've convened the National Security and Defense Council. Please vet official and verified information only, Zelensky said. Here's another tweet. Russian terrorists. The destruction of the Kharkovka hydroelectric power plant dam only confirms to the whole world they must be expelled from every corner of Ukraine land. Not a single meter should be left to them because they use every meter for terror. Here's video of the dam. You won't be able to see it, but it's massive, 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 just huge. And the damage that is occurring as a consequence is catastrophic. Here we are. California Representative Ted Lieu, without evidence, declared Russia guilty of another war crime, calling for them to be designated as a state sponsor of terrorism. Ted Lieu, the blowing up of this dam is another war crime by Russia. Also, it's well past time for Russia to be designated as a state sponsor of terrorism. The Kiev Independent video footage shows a major breach in a section of the dam closest to the Russian-occupied eastern bank of the river. Flooding is expected to reach critical levels at around 11 a.m., according to local authorities. Another EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, without evidence, also declared Russia guilty of war crimes. I find this especially disgusting. Ursula von der Leyen tweets, Russia will have to pay for the war crimes committed in Ukraine. The destruction of the dam, an outrageous attack on civilian infrastructure, puts at risk thousands of people in the Kherson region. Europe is mobilizing support through our civil protection mechanism. She's right that the destruction of the dam and outrageous attack on civilian infrastructure puts at risk thousands of people by the Kherson region, but Russia did not do it. This is simply one more in a long litany of war crime perpetrated by Ukraine. Their true character is clearly revealed here. Meanwhile, the White House said Tuesday afternoon they cannot say conclusively what happened at this point. I'm reminded of an incident last year where Ukraine struck Poland with a missile, only for Zelensky to come out and falsely accuse Russia of being behind the attack. Yes, that's their stock in trade. That is what they do. You think they're a branch of the Democrat Party, lying, stealing, cheating on all counts. Christopher Miller tweets, Zelensky, terror is not limited to our national borders. Russian missiles hit Poland. To fire missiles at NATO territory, This is a Russian missile attack on our collective territory, our collective security. This is a very significant escalation. We must act. This complete fraud, this ridiculous fake president of Ukraine. While NATO holds Russia responsible for the misfire, initial investigation suggests the missile that hit Poland was Ukrainian in origin. Indeed. Since giving this speech, various officials from the Ukrainian side have walked back accusations the missiles were Russian. Zelensky tried to use the false flag to con NATO into war, but the White House wouldn't go along with his lies. Biden came out and said it's highly unlikely Russia was behind the strike, while other anonymous U.S. officials leaked to the press that Ukraine was most likely to blame. Indeed. Indeed. Just imagine now, Twitter, Tucker on Twitter, 60 million viewers? Stunning. We've had some sort of concession here by YouTube, which is finally allowing video evidence contesting the fraudulent 2020 election. My take is they're joining in the effort to get rid of Biden. The Democrats have realized belatedly that this imposter president is doing them great harm. We even have polls declaring that 67% of American voters think that his having a second term would be a catastrophe for the nation. So I think they are now unleashing the dogs. All they have to do is stop censoring a whole lot of very important posts that occurred in the past, in this case, YouTube's, and the evidence against Biden becomes overwhelming. We even have CNN reporting contrary to Biden. This is very, very...
You seem to have frozen up, Jim. And I know you temporarily froze earlier. You should be back. Okay, you guys froze up there for a minute. You are back.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
In what appears to be a stunning reversal of policy, YouTube is finally allowing video evidence contesting a fraudulent 2020 election. This, I believe, is highly significant, indicating that the Democratic Party believes that the imposter Biden, who's not even the real Joe, who appears to have died in 2017, but an actor wearing a face mask, where even his granddaughter declared that her grandfather had died years ago, but that the family was so deeply involved in politics they wanted to continue to exert influence, and that they had imposters playing his role. In a stunning reversal of a policy that's been in place since November 4, 2020, the day after the last presidential election, YouTube, Google, has announced that it will now allow videos questioning whether the 2020 election is stolen. We've provided all kinds of evidence. Dinesh D'Souza's 2,000 mules, all the evidence from Dominion, all the efforts Ron Johnson has done to bring forward all the proof. What happened in Pennsylvania, what happened in Arizona, it's simply outrageous. Indeed, go all the way back to the Texas lawsuit before the United States Supreme Court. There's really no room for doubt about it. We should not trust this announcement any further than anyone could throw the 2024 presidential contender, Chris Christie, who has, of course, just entered the race. However, at least for the meantime, content creators are suddenly allowed to put up as much video evidence as they would like to contest the stolen 2020 election. There are two main takeaways we can read in this abrupt policy change. Before we get to those, here's what YouTube told Axios late last week. In a reversal of its election integrity policy, YouTube will leave up content that says fraud, errors, or glitches occurred in the 2020 presidential election and other U.S. elections. YouTube continued. 2 years, tens of thousands of video removals, and one election cycle later, We recognize it was time to reevaluate the effects of this policy in today's changed landscape. Well, what's changed about the landscape? Notice here they're acknowledging they removed tens of thousands of videos where I'm highly confident each of them provided proof that the 2020 election had been stolen, and yet they, with complete impunity, simply censored and removed them. One election cycle later, where they repeated the same kind of electoral theft they perpetrated in 2020, they did again in 2022. We recognize it's time to reevaluate the effects of this policy in today's changed landscape. What can that possibly mean? By its own admission, YouTube has removed tens of thousands of videos asserting that fraud, errors, and glitches plagued the 2020 election. A sheer volume in terms of gigabytes of evidence that YouTube has withheld from the public since the 2020 election suggests that all of those allegations about said election are true. We crowdsourced the 2020 election. Everyone who noticed anything, from housewives to data analysts who worked for intelligence agencies, was posting video evidence of election fraud online. There were some spectacular fakes, like Sidney Powell. Personally, I believed in Sidney. I don't believe Sidney was a fake. I, the author declares, personally attacked Tucker Carlson for ripping into her. But at the end of the day, Tucker was correct. Powell was a fraud who had no real evidence of election fraud. Sorry, Tucker. When's that Twitter show coming online anyway? We all miss you. Well, it's come back, and most emphatically, with 60 million viewers. Again, I say, I personally believe in Sidney Powell. I do not believe she was a fake. I do not believe she had no real evidence, but there it is. But a lot of the evidence was real. It was substantial, authoritative, and impossible to explain, aside from fraud. Even videos of lawfully appointed authorities, like the special counsel appointed to investigate Wisconsin's dirty election, and I'm right here in Wisconsin where I reside near Madison, were censored from YouTube. At a certain point, the lady doth protest too much. The Google YouTube policy change tells us two things. First, they don't care if anybody finds out now. Even if there was a best case scenario thing to happen right now, and the 2020 election was overturned and Trump was reinstated, Trump could only serve a year and a half before being term limited out. Therefore, YouTube doesn't care if everyone finds out that the suspected pedophile who got, laughing out loud, 81 million votes is actually a fake unelected leader. Second, Donald Trump is an unstoppable juggernaut in 2024. And the deep state wants to be able to legitimately question election results again after Trump wins. Fascinating. Remember, the deep state, which includes the fake news media, the permanent bureaucratic state in Washington, the intelligence agencies, and almost all of Congress, complained for 4 years straight that the 2016 election was stolen by Trump colluding with Vladimir Putin. There was nothing wrong with protesting the 2016 election. It wasn't an insurrection or treason or a reason to lock anyone in a gulag or censor their YouTube channel if someone complained that the 2016 election was stolen. It was also perfectly legitimate, right up until late 2019, to question the integrity of our hackable voting machines. A lot of leading Democrat senators and representatives, up to and including the fake vice president, not Mrs. Willie Brown, claim that voting machines are hooked up to the internet and are vulnerable to hacking and vote manipulation. They said this in a freaking documentary HBO has since taken off the air. It only became treason and insurrection to question election results after a dementia potato who never even campaigned somehow got more votes than any other figure in any election throughout human history. Anyway, YouTube is going to once again allow videos that question the fake 2020 election. As I've said repeatedly, they cannot cheat using the same methods in 2024, which increases Donald Trump's chances. We're going to be watching them like hawks. Therefore, it looks pretty clear that YouTube wants to make it legal to question election results again after the 2024 landslide that is, fingers crossed, coming. What other possible reason could there be for YouTube suddenly changing its policies and allowing content creators to once again question the fake 2020 election results? Why is it suddenly not disinformation to question the results of that election? And I must say, while we do have Chris Christie and Mike Pence joining the fray, that appears only a feeble effort to dilute a vote for Trump, which is not going to happen. The latest polls show Trump with like 56% of the support and DeSantis only 32, in other words, leading DeSantis by 34 points, which is staggering. In my judgment, the primary race is all over before it even began. I'm very happy to say I have an expert on poisoning our water with me today, Clint Greese. Right after the break, Clint will join us and discuss his research on fluoride. Remember, if there's a reason for thinking we might be living in a police state, perhaps the rest of which they're poisoning our water.
Radio at freedomslips.com.
And if for
we'll
some reason the break isn't coming, I'm going to invite your thoughts preliminarily on these first couple of stories because they're of enormous significance. And of course,
management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support. This has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf.
Oh, yeah,
to the free
you're skeptical
truth.
As to whether the,
with your support,
real war going
you will be able to
Ukraine.
Become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada.
But it seems to me there are
tyranny. you know, all kinds of reports coming from multiple news sources around the world,
insurance,
including TASS, among others, make this all too real, sad to say, where I believe actually we're on the verge of a nuclear war, where 100 million will die in the first hour. Russia has overwhelming nuclear supremacy. They have better military equipment.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Nuclear weapons, they will respond to a complete massive onslaught. There's not going to be any trivial exchange of tactical nukes. That's not going to happen. Once it begins to go nuclear, they've wargamed it just as we've wargamed it. There's no way to stop it going whole hog. And that's going to spark a whole hog retaliatory strike, which means we are dead from my opinion. I mean, you can see how it Let's turn to your research on fluoride. Tell us about it. I know you have a book about it. I may post mine, and then you're welcome to present whatever you would like by way of images and so forth. Please, platform.
The People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
To talk about now is what to do to get it out. And that's why I wrote the book. It's basically a handbook for concerned residents to learn how to start and successfully run a local grassroots campaign to stop the fluoridation of the water in their own town. So it's a local issue, understand. There's federal policy. Every state has usually some statement or policy regarding fluoridation, but in the end, it's your local utility that's purchasing the fluoridation chemicals. It's your local utility that has claimed the authority to medicate you through the pipes, the water pipes, and it's they who will ultimately turn off the fluoride when it comes time. And in the end, that is all it really is to just stop adding it. The fight to end fluoridation in your town just means really a click of a mouse button one day when at the water utility plant they stop adding the fluoridation. They don't have to reconfigure, re-engineer the water system. There's nothing we need to do to change anything else about the water system. Just stop adding the poison.
Clint, I have a couple of questions for you right off. When I was growing up in Southern California, the John Birch Society was calling out fluoridation as a communist plot. Now, you mentioned that it's a neurotoxin. I don't know if the public really absorbs what that means. It will kill brain cells. It will kill neurons. It will diminish your brain and thereby your functional intelligence. So it's very serious. And could you confirm or not my impression that, in fact, fluoride originated as a waste from nuclear power plants that in processing, you know, radioactivity and developing nuclear energy, there was this effluvium they did not know what to do with, and they adopted the policy of dumping it into reservoirs, claiming it would be beneficial when it's anything but. Your thoughts?
Okay, yeah, so the connection with nuclear is with the Manhattan Project. So, as you know, the very secretive U.S. Army program to develop the bomb, they determined the best way to enrich the uranium is with a fluoride compound that they invented just for that purpose, an exotic fluoride gas that when they shot it at ordinary uranium enriched it over time, which makes possible for the fissile material in a nuclear bomb. This was all done in secret at the time, and people at the Manhattan Project who were handling these chemicals were getting sick because fluoride is highly toxic and it affects every part of our body. So just like industry at the time, we're going back way back now, right, to the 40s, 30s and 40s, industry was using fluorine and fluorine compounds in a variety of different industrial uses. And so the United States government and many industrialists came together and they said, we've got to find a way to put a good look on fluoride. This is all documented in a book, by the way, called The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson, which is an amazing read. It reads almost like a novel, but it starts from the very, very early inception of the idea to fluoridate our water to cover for the fact that fluoridation chemicals in industrial application cause the workers to have all sorts of ailments, and these companies and the government, you know, federal government, wanted to avoid litigation by these individuals for harm against them. And so it's just a way to cover, in the end, it started as a way to cover up the fact that fluoride's toxicity is extreme and it causes harm to everybody who comes near it.
Yes, yes, yes. Continue, please.
Yeah, so the scandal is, began in deception. It continues in deception. The players have changed a little bit over the time that fluoride has been in our water. Most people don't recognize that from the very inception of the idea of fluoridating the water, there has been opposition. There have been valiant, truth-oriented, patriot, John Birch Society folks who have been standing up against fluoridation every single step of the way. You might not have heard of them because they're obviously not being profiled on the History Channel. They're not being profiled as the heroes they are because the powers that be won't allow that. But I have to tell you, there's never been a moment where fluoridation has not been opposed by we the people of this country. And we continue to oppose it. And that's really why I wrote the book, Something in the Water, 12 Steps to Ending Fluoridation in Your Town, is to encourage people to take up the cause and keep the flame going and end fluoridation once and for all. Now is the best time ever. I hope we'll get some time to talk about the EPA trial that's coming, that's ongoing right now, the federal litigation that the Food and Water Watch, together with the Fluoride Action Network, is taking against the Environmental Protection Agency to force them to do their job and set a safe limit of fluoridation in our drinking water sufficient to protect our brains, which they aren't doing currently. And if they were to do that, it would make the level so low that fluoridation would ostensibly be finished. That case, as so often court cases go, and when we're dealing with such a hot topic, this federal landmark case has been going on now for 6 years. So I'd love to tell you more about that because it really says so much about how the government feels about us. At the same time, it's just another example of how fluoride-free activists have over time put their hopes in one action or other that's finally going to end fluoridation. And what we find over and over again is that the federal government and those who are charged with protecting us from different chemicals like fluoride, particularly in our water, it's one of a kind. Fluoride is one of a kind. It's the protected chemical. It It is a special category all into itself. Every single rule goes out the window when it comes to fluoride. It's always the exceptional case. It's never been approved by the FDA for consumption, but it's been put in our water for the very purpose of supposedly helping prevent cavities. And it's crazy. We live in a crazy town.
Let me tell you how ludicrous it is. I have a dear friend in New York City. He was an inventor. He created a kind of sterile dental floss and offered it to J&J, which had been advertising, claiming it had sterile dental floss when it did not. In fact, the claim was so consequential that surgeons would use a J&J allegedly sterile dental floss in the false belief it was actually sterile, but it wasn't. J&J, apparently, and this is according to his account, I published several articles about at the time, his name is Sean Dix, sought to get it out to the public, but J&J wanted to appropriate. I'm giving you Sean's version, which I happen to believe, and they sought to take him out. He actually was subjected to a massive dosage of fluoride mixed with other elements to make it virtually undetectable by his then dentist. Again, I'm reporting what Sean has documented, and he's done a voluminous research, scientific, and the whole lot. The long-term consequences have been that he's losing all of his teeth. I think he's lost 14 teeth to this point. I mean, so far opposite is it that fluoride will help to prevent your tooth decay. Fluoride will actually destroy your teeth if you're as unfortunate as was Sean, who, to my astonishment, is alive and kicking to this day. He's still fighting his case, but this has endured now, I don't know, 15 years. I've been with him all the way. It's just absolutely shocking, Clint, what happened in this instance, where fluoride was used as a weapon of death. I mean, this was an attempted murder of a man for economic purposes. And of course, in American society, conspiracy is the most prosecuted crime. I mean, you know, far from attacking conspiracy theorists, it is the most prosecuted crime where most American conspiracies are economic. And this would fall within that broad purview. But please do continue, Clint. I just want to comment on the claim that it preserves your teeth. You know, it helps to prevent cavities.
Yes, it is laughable. But fluoride is insidious. It accumulates in our bodies. Every bit that you drink, some say around 50%, depending on your body and your habits, but a good 50%. Accumulates in your bones and in your tissues over time. But the exposure begins in the womb. It goes through the placenta into the developing embryo. It's very emotional for me even just think of it. But the brain damage starts there, and it continues every single day that you consume it. The developing brain is forced to deal with this onslaught, and 5 to 7 points of IQ are lost in the average person because of the exposure to fluoridation chemicals at the concentrations that they currently put in our water. That's what the science is showing, and that there's no safe level. As far as the teeth, this is a big obsession, of course, because that's their that's the smoke screen that that's used to keep it in their water, that it's good for our teeth. But if the insanity that it helps our teeth is shown by the fact that 40% or now more of adolescents are showing overexposure by a visible indicator, which we can see on our teeth. There's, if you've seen people with a white chalky stains on their teeth, it's where their teeth is unnaturally white in places. Like a flocking, that is called dental fluorosis, and it is widely known and accepted even by proponents of fluoridation that the fluoride in the water is causing this dental fluorosis, and it actually happens in the gums when your children's teeth are developing, the very cells that are responsible for producing enamel, think about it, your body makes enamel. It's a miracle. But the enzymes responsible for producing that enamel are interfered with when they're exposed to fluoride through the blood supply, and it produces this fake or this enamel that's not enamel anymore. Now, they'll tell you it's just cosmetic, and it's actually more resistant to cavities. But the truth is that this is indicating that we're all getting overexposed to fluoridation chemicals. When they first began fluoridation, they accepted that some fluorosis was going to happen, and they estimated it'd be 10% of the population. And now we're up to 40 and 50%. It keeps increasing every year, the amount of fluorosis that we're seeing. So this is just an outward indicator that we're overexposed, and it should make people think about all of the exposures throughout the entire body. And it's been well documented. Fluoridation is the most studied compound in regards to the human body and biology. Animal and human studies of fluoridation on the human body in every organ, there are thousands and thousands of studies. You can research them. In fact, it comes mostly from places in the world where they're unfortunate to have high concentrations of calcium fluoride in the water, in the ground near where the water source comes. And so the people, and there's some places in Iran, in China, and in Mexico and other places in the world where the populations there are exposed to very, very high levels of fluoridation. You see skeletal crippling of people. You see extreme lowering of IQ. And so the deleterious effects are very well known around the world, and people are trying to reduce their exposure to fluoride. Meanwhile, the health agencies in the United States government, the American Dental Association, the industries that you talk about who make great money, dental care products, off the good name of fluoride, they're all in on the take, and they're making money off of our misery. So we need to do something about it. The story of fluoridation has been told. It's been going on for upwards to 70 years in some of the cities where it was first adopted. And now it's time for people to simply dedicate themselves to stopping fluoridation everywhere you can. Whether you're in a city where they're talking about adding fluoridation, and they still do, or if you live in a city where there's currently fluoridation, you need to work politically to stop it.
Clint, I don't know what the polls show, but I would say most Americans still think fluoride is good for you and it benefits you by halting tooth decay. I think most Americans still believe it. Do you have any contemporary data on how widespread is this false belief, provably false, scientifically inaccurate belief?
Well, yeah, so it varies wherever you are. There's some good variation in terms of people's impressions. Broadly speaking, there's actually three categories. One is people who are absolutely clear that fluoridation is bad for you. You could say about a third of people are like that. And then there's another third of people who drank the Kool-Aid, who trust the science, and they are big advocates of fluoridation. And then there's a big middle ground, another third of people who don't know it exists at all. I would say it could even be in many places a bigger proportion. Many people don't even know fluoridation exists at all, and they don't even know they're drinking a poison. And if they do, they have a very vague idea it has something to do with the teeth, and they don't really understand it very much at all, and they don't even want to look at it. So it's opaque to a good number of people, and that's by design. You know, back in the 50s, when the federal government was promoting fluoridation and they were trying to get cities all over the country to adopt it, and now 200 million Americans are under fluoridation schemes, they were promoting it, you know, like crazy, using all of the propaganda techniques that you've seen and, you know, that.
Okay, we lost you on this end, Jim and Clint. I cannot hear Clint at this moment. Since just after the phone call. Can you guys hear me? Might be a delay anyway. I'll have to type to you guys. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. Clint is continuing to talk. I'm not sure if Jim knows maybe him going on mute might have muted Clint. Let me type them a message. Okay, I sent the message. I don't think. I take a minute for them to even notice. Jim is talking to Clint right now.
Me, what you just said.
Oh, my apology. What I'm saying is it's just like with the facts. That it's supposed to be safe and effective, and if you raise the least objection to it, you are something wrong with you, not with a product being pushed by Pfizer and Moderna, even though it's bringing about damage and death on an unprecedented scale.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's well documented. It causes cancers. It slows the thyroid. It destroys your immune system in the bones where your cells designed to fight things are made. And, of course, the brain. It just really – fluorine is the ninth smallest atom in the universe, and it's very, very small. But, you see, in the world of chemistry, it is a dream come true. Fluorine is a dream – it's a dream ion for any chemist because you can build the most amazing things. You know, progress and better living through chemistry had a lot to do with fluoride because you can create, again, a whole number of things that you would never be able to. Pharmaceuticals are using them like crazy. We were talking about roofies, you and I, yesterday. You know, it's a fluorinated version of a benzodiazepine. And so basically, the way I tell people is that fluorine is like the super glue of chemistry. It's so electronegative that it will bind with anything. It'll beat out any other element and take hold of something. You won't find it ever in nature by itself. It has to combine with something else, and it will. It'll beat out anything else in terms of grabbing any other molecule. And so chemists can, but it's very small. So chemists can use it to pin together various compounds, various molecules. Take two molecules you already know, pin them together with fluoride, you have a whole new molecule. So things like Teflon wouldn't be Teflon except for fluoride. That's why it's so smooth and so durable. Freon in our refrigerators is because of fluoride. So there's just so many industrial uses. It's a massive, massive, massive industry. But particularly, we should focus on the water and the source of fluoridation chemicals in our water comes from phosphate mining today, primarily. It used to come from aluminum smelting, because when you add fluoride, sodium fluoride to the smelting process, you actually lower the temperature required to melt the aluminum and remove it from the ore by half, which is an enormous savings for the people who want to smelt. So the aluminum company Alcoa was huge in promoting fluoridation in the beginning. But it's moved from sodium fluoride now to hydrofluorosilicic acid, which comes from the smokestacks of the phosphate mining industry. And they are not able to put it in the water. I mean, like rivers, like the affluent outside of their factories, they're not able to put it into the air. They would be fined enormous, but the EPA regulates that. But if they put it in big white containers and ship it around the country to cities with the word fluoridation chemical on it, then people can put it in the water. So ultimately, it's just another way of getting rid of a toxin. So it's a pollution. It's just pollution once again, but disguised as public health policy for our teeth. And the studies that pro-fluoridation has put forth to say that it actually helps cavities are of very poor quality. And at best, they can say that you'll save less than one cavity over your entire lifetime by exposing yourself to fluoridation chemicals over your entire lifetime.
And meanwhile, you've lost those functioning neurons in your brain that have reduced your intelligence level. I mean, it's not much of a trade-off. How expensive and difficult would it be for fluoride to be properly disposed of, Clint? It sounds to me like it would be very expensive and time-consuming, so they'd rather just dump it in your local water reservoir. What if Americans realize that's akin to dumping tons of arsenic in your local reservoir? Maybe they get a better handle on the situation.
That's right. You said it exactly right. Somehow people don't associate fluoride in a bad way. They've succeeded in making fluoride But when people hear the word fluoride, they should hear like the word arsenic. They should act like the way they hear the word lead, in fact, they hear mercury. They understand those to be highly toxic and not, and even in very small quantities. So yeah, the EPA regulates the tap water. There is no allowance for arsenic. There is no allowance for lead in the water. Zero is the goal, is the contaminant goal for those. And fluoride should be the same because it's equally toxic. But again, it is the exception. It's the protected chemical in our country. Fluoride is a fascinating, again, to chemists, it's a dream come true, but to your biology, it is a wrecking ball.
Clint, we're about to hit the break. Why don't you put up the image of your book cover, for example, and prepare to take us through whatever graphs or other images you may have to follow after the break. Something in the water. 12 steps to ending fluoridation in your town. Clint, I'm just delighted to have you here. You are very clear, very knowledgeable. I'm sure the audience is responding with equal enthusiasm. I'm so thankful you're here today. If I'm not mistaken, we're about to be hit with a break, so any time.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda.
Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you're doing well. Mitch has made it back to the house, and Clint is on Zoom with Jim, waiting for Jim to return here on Revolution Radio. There's Jim. Welcome back, my friend. Well, maybe he doesn't hear me. No hearing it. Okay, break's over. Anyway, Jim, are you there yet? So, yeah.
Okay, Clint, we're back on the air here. The break is over. Please do continue. Pick up wherever you like. And, of course, we want to discuss the EPA lawsuit you mentioned previously.
Absolutely. It's astonishing what's going on at that level, but it's also very telling, once again, about how the powers that be operate. But I want to really encourage people and inspire people to take up action. It's been, again, very well established. This is horrible public policy, and it's something that every person with a conscience needs to take seriously and step up and do something about in their town. It's a local action, so you can really make a difference in your town. That's why I wrote the book, Something in the Water. It started back in 2013, not long after I dedicated myself to ending water fluoridation as my mission, that whether it took me my whole life, that's what I was going to do. The folks in Portland, Oregon were faced with a city council that decided that they were going to start adding fluoride chemicals to their water. And they put together political action to put it on the ballot and stop it. And Portland today is the largest city in America that is unfluoridated. And they were successful because they pulled together very quickly a campaign to stop the city council from doing this. And here's a picture of the night, the election night, the victory party. Just the happiness, the thrill, the joy, the victory from that night was so palpable. I was there. I went to Portland the last week of their campaign because I really wanted to be part of a campaign that was professionally run, that in the end was successful, because at the time I wasn't very political even myself. And so I went there to learn, and I met the leaders of the campaign, and I brought back to our own local group in San Francisco, you know, some good learnings from there. But I said to myself, well, heck, everyone who's fighting fluoride everywhere in the world needs to learn about Portland's success and how they did it. So I started just with the intention of one single teleconference, inviting people from all over the world to participate, where the leaders of the Portland campaign came and told their story, all their lessons, from how they gathered signatures to how they ran ad campaigns to how they fundraised, all the things, all the elements of a campaign. And that was such a hit that it became a monthly event called the International Forestry Teleconference that went for 4 years in a row. I hosted this event for 2 hours, and it's all recorded on the International Forestry Teleconference Library. You can listen to the audio, the original audio, but after all of that experience, learning from doctors and dentists and lawyers and politicians and just the average campaigner in towns all over America, all over Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, wherever fluoridation exists, campaigners were coming forth and we were all learning from each other best practices. But in, that's what became the book. So so many years of so many wonderful interviews with so many amazing people from all over, their personal stories are captured in the book. And this book is really a how-to for ending fluoridation in your town, a step-by-step plan that's very manageable. And it's really an essential guide to anybody who's determined that it's time to stop the fluoridation. So you've got wisdom of decades and decades of wisdom and experience from campaigners all over the world and their personal stories and their personal motivation. So I'm very proud of the book. Again, if you want to talk about is fluoride bad for you, if you're still wondering about that, there's a book, the ultimate book called The Case Against Fluoride by Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network that chronicles in elaborate detail every single reason why fluoride is not good for you, why it shouldn't be in the water. And again, if you want to know about the conspiracies behind it, that began it, the history of it, the book called The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson is a must read for that. But not, once you know that fluoride is no good for you and you understand the history and how we got here, all there is left is to work to stop it. And it's through politics. Now, the average person who doesn't want fluoride in his or her water may not be very well equipped to get involved in politics. I myself was a novice, and I learned over these last 10 years now to get involved in politics. And I've run campaigns myself. I've become a campaign consultant locally in San Francisco and run local electoral campaigns for office, including Congress against Nancy Pelosi. So I've trained myself just by doing. In fact, politics, of a lot of things about campaigning, the best way to learn political campaigning is simply by doing it. It's one of the few things. Yes, I suppose you can study it in school, but ultimately just get started campaigning. And that's why I put together this book. It's both inspirational from the point of view of people who tell their stories and why they're in it. Dentists, for example, who are campaigning now because they feel that they need to make up for the fact that they promoted fluoridation for so many years, and now they're redeeming themselves by organizing against fluoridation. And then very practical guide from everything from how to just talk about fluoridation to the average person without going down a rabbit hole, how to protect yourself from fluoridation while you're campaigning, and then the fundamentals of campaigning, like messaging, like strategizing, and how to keep your team going. And a lot of wisdom that was distilled from over 100 hours of interviews from campaigners all over the world.
That's all sensational. Do you have a series of steps that can be taken? Perhaps you have a sequence you can show here and review for us about how to go about tackling these issues in somewhat greater detail, Clint?
Yeah, let me get that up in front of us. I can tell you it starts with confronting the deception. So everyone ultimately has to just deal with the fact that we are being fooled. You know, there is a deception. And so in the first step, every person has to ultimately come to terms with the enormity of this deception, and more importantly, learn how to talk about it with others when you're out on the campaign trail. You don't want to go down the rabbit hole, because too often people will sidetrack themselves. I think you've already seen yourself that too often people get kind of addicted to conspiratainment. There's certain intrigue about, okay, but who are the players and who are these people you're talking about who are trying to poison us? And people want to go down that rabbit hole. And I have to tell you, it's not good for the campaigner because ultimately it takes people away from taking action. So there's in this chapter advice about how to turn conversations from why are they doing it to now that you know there's a neurotoxin in the water, what are you going to do about it? And that's what matters. In the second step, we talk about protecting yourself, because in the end, as long as there's fluoridation still in your water, you have to find ways to reduce your exposure to it. And by the way, there are other sources of fluoride in your life that you may not be aware of other than your tap water. The fluoridation chemicals are chemistry, and they're in a lot of things, and you're getting exposed already in a lot of different ways. Teflon pans, for example, fumigants, even for organic produce that come from foreign countries. Anyway, so you need to learn how to protect yourself and reduce your exposure. But at the same time, when you're on the campaign trail, people are going to ask how they too can protect themselves. And once you learn a few things about filtration, reverse osmosis, and various things that you can do to stop the consumption of fluoridation in your home, you can be then an expert for those you meet along the campaign trail and establish your credibility minimally with them when you first introduce the subject to them and help them protect themselves even before they get involved in campaigning. But step three is when we get really, for the first time, into deep politics. So we teach you how to map your jurisdiction. Various jurisdictions are as diverse as you can imagine. Like here in San Francisco, our water comes from pristine water melt in a reservoir that they built in the Sierra Nevadas 110 years ago, and an aqueduct to bring it all the way across the Central Valley and up through the peninsula and into San Francisco. It's this elaborate system to bring this beautiful water, but at some point on the East Bay, they have a fluoridation chemical added to our beautiful water. So it's not only the configuration of your water system, where the water comes from, where it goes, where it's fluoridated, who's affected by the fluoridation. Some cities are partially fluoridated, like in Fresno, it's a patchwork because their water comes from wells, and depending on whether the well is fluoridated or not, your tap water is fluoridated. So it takes a fair amount of research to find out where is the fluoridation affecting people. And then in terms of the politics as well, how is fluoridation authorized, like legally? Presumably it came from either an ordinance that was passed by the city or county, or through the ballot measure in San Francisco, for example, which was back in the 50s. Some percentage of voters voted to add fluoridation, and we're still living with it 70 years later. There are court rulings that are very relevant. Sometimes there are what are known as state mandates. In California, there's a requirement that cities over a certain size have to fluoridate their water, although there are some cities that are bucking it, and because there's no penalty for not doing it. Santa Cruz and Santa Barbara, for example, are two cities that don't fluoridate their water and haven't paid any price for not doing so. Anyway, so you need to understand your jurisdiction, what gives your utility the authorization to fluoridate your water, and that is going to help you then choose your pathway to victory, which is step four. And step we talk about, we instruct people on the five avenues of political change to choose from, the pros and cons of each one, and empowers you to pick one for your campaign. And so that's whether you want to do direct lobbying of your elected officials, which is the most effective and cost-effective, depending on your elected officials, of course. And if that doesn't work, then you have the opportunity to take things to the ballot by putting a resolution on the ballot, or putting yourself on the ballot as a candidate. Those are three options. And then, of course, you have the court system. You can sue based on different... depending on your jurisdiction, what the laws are in place. Here in San Francisco, we have something called precautionary principle. So we're going to be suing the city and county of San Francisco for putting fluoride in water when they should, when there's ample evidence of harm, they should basically outlaw it. And then finally, it's direct action. So that's all the different activities you're aware of, like protesting. It's all the creative things that people have, events, musical events, flyering, letter writing campaigns. They're all called direct action. And so that's the subject of step four. Step five is mastering the message. So communication, communication, communication. Every campaign is basically run by its communication. So in step five, I teach principles of communication so that your messaging has the intended effect with the audience that you're after, whether it's the audience of the general public or a specific elected official or the media. You need to be aware of what your objective is with your audience at all times to be successful. And then step six is turn passion into action. And actually, I have to let you know that every month we're having a live event where we're literally going through these steps every month. So step six is June, and in this coming weekend, every second Saturday, and if you're living down under, it's a Sunday morning, we have 4A3 campaigns, which is again a live event that goes through each of the 12 steps of the book in order, so that we can go deep and together continue learning from each other. There are ongoing campaigns. It's called Fluoride-Free Campaigns, and you can sign up by going to fluoridefreecampaigns.com. That's all one word, fluoride, F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E, freecampaigns.com. And you can sign up for the live meeting and join us this Saturday in North America and Europe, or Down Under, Sunday mornings. And this month, we're going to focus on step six, which is turning passion into action. This is all about strategizing. So now that you understand your general pathway to victory, you've got your messaging down, there are so many strategic decisions to be made. And in this step, I introduce something called dynamic strategizing, which makes strategizing easy, much easier than a lot of people make it. And it also makes your strategy able to communicate easily to your team, so everyone's on the same page.
Excellent. Excellent.
And so you can see that we continue through the rest of the, we'll go through the rest of the year, each month with a new step. In step seven, July, we'll be talking about winning the credibility war. As you imagine, it's a very big topic, because we're called names, because the opposition, our opposition, the fluoride promoters, are constantly attacking our credibility. We have to be superlative. We have to be amazing at managing our own credibility. So that there's a lot of advice in step seven about how to make sure to speak factually, how to deal with the onslaught of the credibility war. And then step eight is actually telling your own story, because every single person has a story. It could be the greatest asset of your campaign. How did you come to this issue in the first place? What made you finally realize that this was not a good thing, fluoridation in the water? And then what's your life been like since you've learned it's not okay? There's a lot of great stories of fluoride-free activists and their personal stories about how they got involved. Everything from people whose autistic son was his symptoms were exaggerated because of fluoride consumption through the water, to a woman in the Rocky Mountains whose horses died because of the fluoride in the water, to, again, dentists who want to redeem themselves. So it's an amazing chapter of stories, very inspiring. Step nine, we go into publicizing government secrets. So you're familiar with the Freedom of Information Act. At the federal level, every states and oftentimes local municipalities have laws that make public records available and how to get them. And you can reveal government secrets, and you can demand to see emails, for example, between your water utility and elected officials, and find out what kinds of things they're talking about behind the scenes in terms of everything from how much they're spending on fluoridation to the protests that you, if you are able to get a campaign going, sometimes you'll find that they are emailing each other about your campaign, and you can get that information from them through the public records requests, and then publicize those secrets. Step 10 is reaching out to allies. So we do have allies, the health freedom folks. We just lived through a pandemic, so a lot of people are waking up to this as a health freedom issue, medical freedom issue, and starting to connect the dots. Before the pandemic, you know, the general advice was to keep things separated. You know, that you work on vaccines or you work on 5G and smart meters, and we'll work on fluoride, and we'll keep, you know, we won't combine. We'll keep ourselves pure and in our silos so that people aren't confused. But now more than ever, people are aligning with each other because there's much greater principles, and people starting to see the overall connections between these various onslaughts, all these various attacks on our well-being. Step 11 is all about not giving up. There's one thing that you can't do. You can't give up. You can't. There's so many people come to the fluoridation issue thinking it's going to be easier. I should just be able to send a book about fluoridation, like, for example, the case against fluoridation. Send this book to my council member. That should be all I need to do. It's so obvious. But in fact, what campaigners learn over and over again, that it's not easy, that there is a coordinated effort to keep it in place, and it's very resilient, and so you can't give up. And then step 12 is all about visualizing success, the power of imagination to see the future in real, very real terms, through campaigning to end fluoridation in your town. So I'm very proud of this book. Again, it is the distillation of countless years of experience, combined with some basic fundamentals of political campaigning. And so I invite people, even if you're an amateur, even if you hadn't thought of yourself as an activist, to take up this book, read it, enjoy it, and see if it doesn't move you to start taking action, because you both will be inspired by the stories you read, but you'll also be equipped with some very practical steps that you need to take.
Well, I'm going to find out if we can take calls during the final segment, Clint. But in any case, I would like you to address the EPA case in some detail.
I will, yes. Yeah. So the EPA, when I'm talking about the EPA case, Food and Water Watch and the Florida Action Network and some individuals are suing the Environmental Protection Agency in a court case that is in the federal level. It's unlike any other court case. So in the past, the authority to fluoridate our water actually has been ruled at the state level many times. And you talked about a police state earlier, but the authority given by the courts up until recently have been based on something called the police powers. It's literally something that is a right that is given to the states to use a police power to protect us. That's why all of the health regulations during the pandemic were promulgated by the states, because the states can do things that the federal government is not allowed to do, including do what's best for you, like help your teeth by putting fluoride in the water. Anyway, the EPA trial is completely different. This is a case based solely on the science. So, you know, when people talk about that we're living in a time when science, there's a real battle over what is science and how should we regard science, trust the science. Who are the scientists, you know, that we should trust? Are these public agencies who proclaim that fluoride is good for your teeth, and that's the end of the story? They're now under oath in this court case. And one judge, one federal judge here in San Francisco, in fact, I've been attending every single court case since it was live before the pandemic, before they went on to Zoom, has been dragging on for 6 years now, unfortunately. But to see under the Toxic Substance and Control Act, which is a federal act that was passed in the 70s that gave the EPA authority over regulating the safety of our drinking water. It also provided for a provision where citizens can petition the EPA to begin to regulate a chemical that they aren't currently regulating based on the science that the citizens brings forth in their petition. And if the EPA should decline that petition, to regulate the chemical in question, then that same citizen has a remedy in federal court, a very specific remedy described in the Toxic Substance Control Act, where you can sue directly in federal court. And that's what the Food and Water Watch and the Fluoride Action Network have done. So the court case actually ran its full course. They had experts on their side. There were depositions, very incriminating things. It was the first of its kind. It was the first time in history that these government agencies had to only speak under oath, which, you know, means that it's a criminal act to perjure yourself. These folks can say anything, and they do say anything and everything, lies and misrepresentations of data all day long. But now they can't. And so there was some very incriminating things that came out. The case ran its full course on the day that the judge was to rule one way or another, that the science shows that there is an unreasonable risk of fluoridation chemical in our water. Therefore, the EPA must begin to regulate it specifically to protect our brains. On that day, he determined that he was going to postpone his judgment because there were now at that time known to be an ongoing study, massive study about the neurological effects of fluoride being conducted by the National Toxicology Program.
Hold that thought, Clint. We're going to a break, and we're going to take callers after 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. So I'm unclear whether we're going to get an actual connection with the studio.
We'll be right back after this message.
Why'd you put up your book cover again? About 4 minutes.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Jim and Clint talking about fluoride. Give us a call at 540-352-4452. I know I've been out of action off and on for the last few weeks, so it's been kind of rough for Jim to take calls. So give us a call then today, 540-352-4452. Are you back there yet, Jim?
We're back on the air, my friend. So, Clint, go ahead. If we happen to get any calls, I'll try to bring them in, but I can't hear what's going on out there in the studio, so we'll just wing it. Go for it. Tell us more about the EPA case.
Just to review, in the past, courts have avoided the question of whether it's safe and or effective and have simply ruled that states have police powers, the authority, to do what they believe is in your best interest. And that's how fluoridation has been authorized by the courts all these years. But for the first time, this case is specifically about the science and specifically about the neurotoxic effects, that is, how it affects your brain, how it poisons your brain. And so as the case went to its fullness, the judge decided to postpone his ruling. One man has had to digest. He wasn't familiar with fluoridation or anything to do with the biology of the brain and fluoridation's effects on the brain. This one man, a judge in federal court in San Francisco, it's on his shoulders to decide whether fluoride is an unreasonable risk and therefore the EPA needs to remove it from our water or not. And so he didn't rule. He decided not to rule because there at the time was the biggest research study by the National Toxicology Program that National Toxicology Program, which is part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, was doing this massive meta study. And he said, let's wait and see how that goes. And so a year ago, they completed the study, but they didn't release it because the results were unfavorable to current public policy. And we found out through the Freedom of Information Act request emails that show that they were covering it up. They were holding it from release and continuing to ask for more review and more review and more review, unlike any other report or study ever before. And yet we also discovered through the Freedom of Information Act request that they had released the results, however, to the American Dental Association. We assume it's in order to give the ADA, which is part of the fluoridation religion, and dentists everywhere are the biggest acolytes of fluoridation, and they were given the results in advance in order to be able to figure out a way to spin it to show that fluoridation isn't harmful. And some of these folks are still claiming after all. So just last month, they finally released it. And we got our hands on it, and it was because of this court case that really the NTP was forced to finally give up and give in and show it. So it was at the very highest levels of the Department of Health and Human Services that they were suppressing this very important report. So it protracted the court case, a year longer than it needed to. But just because of this, now the case is back on. So the opposing parties, the the EPA, represented by Department of Justice lawyers, are now going to take a look at this new information, have their experts testify and our experts testify to try to interpret this new data set, which in itself concludes that there's no safe level of fluoride to protect the brain. There's no safe level that you can put in the water. There is no safe level. It says it right in the report. It's a very, very, very large and lengthy report, but in it, it's very clear. There's no safe level. That's all we really need, and this case should be over, but we're going to see how it plays out. We have to go. The trial date is actually set for next year now, 2024. So between now and January of 2024, we're going to do all the discovery again. We're going to get their experts in front of a camera and depose them, and we're going to have our experts, and the judge once again is going to be in this same predicament. If his gavel goes down and says that the data says clearly that there is an unreasonable risk of fluoridation to our brains, that the EPA, you now must regulate it accordingly, that's what we're hoping for. That's what we're reaching for. But again, hope is something that fluoridation free activists have lived a lot on, and a lot of people are putting all of their eggs in this one basket. And I encourage people not to. I encourage people to get active politically now. That all of this data that's coming out is something you can use in your arsenal to go do lobbying of your elected officials. Did you know that the EPA was doing this study? Did you know the EPA is being sued for the neurotoxic effects? Do you know that the latest report from the National Toxicology Program has determined that there's no safe level of fluoride in the water to protect our brains? Did you know that? This is the perfect time to get ahead of the curve. Whether or not the judge determines he's going to rule, who knows what can happen in these court cases. I'm sure you're familiar with the courts, and you know how things go. We can't rely on the court to do the right thing or in any kind of real time frame. Let's get involved and get political now. Use all this information that's coming out on your campaign as an advantage to win.
Listen, we do have a caller. Paul, if you can hear us, please do join. We're hoping we can hear you. Please, Paul.
Yeah, no, great topic today.
I cannot hear Paul.
Can you hear me now?
No, they can't hear. Can you hear me, Jim?
I cannot hear Paul.
Can you hear me at all, Jim?
I can hear you, but we're not through the... What the hell's happened here? Let me see. It should be coming through Soundbox. I can hear you through my earphones.
Paul's on the call with me. I can hear Paul. I don't know why you can't hear him.
Well, I can hear him through my headphones, but it's not coming through my Soundbox. That's a problem. But if you give me Paul, give me your question, and I'll convey it to Clint, and we'll get his answer.
Right. Well, I was just curious. I didn't catch the whole show, but did he say earlier that Portland was the largest city that did not have fluoridation?
Yes.
Okay, great. And that
Paul is asking Clint for confirmation of your report that Portland is the largest city that has rejected fluoridation. And yes, you didn't see it, but he had a photograph of the citizens of Portland rejoicing when they rejected fluoridation. Yes, so you're spot on. Go ahead. More.
Right. Well, so, and he said he was, there's a case pending now in San Francisco. Is that what I heard?
That's right. That's right. It's all resolved on the shoulders of one judge. But there's this massive study that was conducted. The judge actually delayed making a ruling until the study was completed that shows there is no safe level of fluoride, that fluoride functions as a neurotoxin and destroys brain cells no matter how much is in the water, that there's no safe level, and that the highest level, the results of this massive study were withheld from the public, that they've been shared with the American Dental Association in order for them to figure out how to spin it, how to respond, how to cope with it. But this study ought to be decisive. If there were any legitimacy in government regarding this issue, this ought to be decisive. But, of course, we know better than to take that for granted.
Yeah, key phrase there, if there were any legitimacy.
If there were any legitimacy in government, exactly, Paul.
unfortunately, there's not. Yeah, no, San Francisco, as he mentioned, most of the peninsula and San Francisco gets their water from essentially near Yosemite, Hetch Hetchy, you know.
Yeah, Sierra. Yeah. He recorded how they get water. They get this wonderful pure water from the mountains, and then they add the fluoride to it, which is a bloody shame, because otherwise they might have the best drinking water in the United States. So
it's just a crime and absurdity that people would rejoice. Oh, they're not poisoning us anymore. You know, good God.
I know. And as I mentioned, remember Patrick McShay, when he gave that fifth reason why you might be living in a police state if, and the very first was your water is being poisoned, you know, or you're being forced to take injections that might kill you. I mean, this is the devastating illustration of that key point.
Well, when I was a kid, we took fluoride pills. If you can imagine that, I remember them, you know, many, many years later after I kind of just woke up my dad or tried to. It was an ongoing process of trying to wake up my own dad. But I asked him if he, you know, remembers that. And he goes, oh, yeah. I go, so I take it you would not do that in retrospect. He goes, no, I don't think so.
Paul is saying,
let me
share it with Clint. Paul is saying when he was a kid, they actually took fluoride pills. Clint, they actually took fluoride pills, and he was asking his dad if he remembered that. And his father agreed, yeah, he remembered it. And he asked, would you do it today? And he said, no, he probably not. Continue, Paul.
Right. Well, so again, you know, this brainwashing has been around, and yet the grim truth about the science is nothing new, and that's the title of a book I picked up probably in the early 80s, maybe, late 70s, early 80s, when I was really starting to get into stuff. Was at a used bookstore. It was called The Grim Truth About Fluoridation, written in the 50s. I want to say it's like 57 or 58. And when I read that book in the 80s, I couldn't believe it. So many things, as you know, Jim, when you discovered them, it's like, how could this be so? How could this be the reality? How could they be getting away with stuff? If you recall when you first started waking up,
yeah.
It's like, good
let me
God,
share that.
Man.
Let me but, share this with Clint. Paul's talking about a yeah. book published in the 1950s that was laying out all the hazards of fluoride and how unbelievable it is that we've had to go. I mean, this is nearly 70 years since that book was published, Clint, and it's making, you know, telling points about fluoridation and the damage it does, and yet it had no effect. Hopefully, this new study, which is the largest ever undertaken on the effects of fluoride, will exert a decisive role here. Paul, continue.
Oh, that's pretty much all I had. I was just going to make
well,
a
I'm
joke.
Glad.
If you can imagine how smart I would be without taking those fluoride pills.
That's right.
I would be intolerable.
Yes. Well, fortunately, there you are. All this will be in the recording, I'm sure, because I'm actually wound up recording via Skype. So all the conversation will be there. It's just that Clint and I can't hear it through the Zoom. I mean, it's just the damnedest thing. So we've got the images and everything Clint's been presenting on Zoom, but somehow the connection didn't work today. I'm sorry about that. I'm glad you called, Paul. I'm very glad you called.
Clint, sure. Happy to call. Do my part.
Thanks. Excellent. Clint, go ahead. Add further thoughts of yours about the EPA and all that. Yes.
So the scandal continues. So, you know, just to give you a sense of the science wars that we're in, the California Dental Health Director buried some data that showed that there is definitely problems with brain damage because of toxicity. You see, he, like so many other scientists, are at work contriving science to show that fluoridation doesn't affect your brain, and trying to come up with different scenarios and modeling that can produce a study that proves just the opposite. And they've been trying to do it in this time frame here where the EPA trial has been postponed, has been on hold. They've been hard at work trying to doctor up some new science to show that fluoridation doesn't affect the brain. And again, through the Freedom of Information Act request in California, our lawyer, who's amazing, he's Dr. Conant's son, Michael, He was raised for this job. He did a Freedom of Information Act request here in California and found out that this head dentist, the California State Dental Director, who basically works for the dental lobby, tried to get this research going, and when the results were the opposite of what he wanted, he suppressed the data, and the emails show that they tried, this is the guy right here, they tried to find some way of modeling the data results to come up with a conclusion that they wanted to come up with. And when they couldn't do that even, he went ahead and published the paper and took out some damning facts to come to the conclusion that they wanted to. And then these emails, it's just shows the lengths that these folks will go to contrive studies to produce something that looks like a scientific justification for their public policy. And it's just criminal. But this is the extent. This is really the surprise for the fluoride free activists. You know, whether you've been doing it for a while or whether you're considering starting up a campaign in your local area, you have to realize that these folks are really in it to keep fluoridation in the water at all costs. That's their number one mission. They want this flowing in our water so badly. You can look at the motivation that they want to save money, as you were saying, because it's a toxic byproduct that they don't have to now spend time to neutralize. But I just believe there's got to be more to it than that. I now have come to believe that one of the purposes of putting the fluoridation chemicals in our water is to dumb us down, is to placate us, is to keep us sedated. Fluoridation chemicals have the ability to make us more docile.
Do you suspect that was true from the beginning?
That was the motivation from the beginning?
Yeah.
I don't know, because the motivations have changed over time. I don't even know what I'm, if, you know, I... We're all left to theorize. The best theory is the one that explains the observable phenomena the best. And the more I spend time campaigning against fluoride, and the more I see their desperate attempts to keep the public policy alive, it just points to something. It keeps pointing my attention to something more than simple profit, a profit margin. There's got to be something more to it. And if you look at Americans and you see how they can turn on the news and learn about so many scandals, one scandal after another, and go from being outraged one moment to being like ho-hum within a few hours or, you know, within a week of the news cycle, it's astonishing to me. And I believe that perhaps, you know, there's something chemically going on in our brains.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, Clint, you've just done a masterful job of laying all this out so extremely clearly, utterly convincingly. And the EPA study, this seems to me to be so devastating to the pro-fluoride effort that it reeks of corruption, that it would be suppressed at all, and that this keep vigor in California should suppress it and even publish a misleading report that omits crucial data contradicting the narrative he's promoting is outrageous. I suspect that is criminal. I wonder whether lawsuits ought to be brought against him and others for, you know, betraying the public trust. This is an abuse of office. I would expect there are statutes that covered malfeasance of this order, especially when it's having effects on such an enormous scale. I mean, the vast effects of our drinking water containing this neurotoxin affecting virtually all public drinking water in the United States. I mean, this is as calamitous as it gets, though not quite on the scale of a nuclear attack, which I'm sorry to say I expect to be forthcoming. But my God, if we're going to be looking out for the public health, obviously this is an abdication of responsibility.
Yes, the controversy around fluoridation in America is a case study in everything that's wrong about America. If you study the history of fluoridation, the politics behind it, It reveals every single scheme. It has the exact formula that you see that's deployed for any number of propaganda or psyops in terms of the collusion between the government, industry, media, academia, nonprofits, professional organizations like the ADA, all working in lockstep, the exact same message all the time. It shows you and how they use science to promote their credibility. It is exactly the same playbook that they use to propagandize us for things from vaccination to you name it, all of the things, cancer cure, supposed cancer treatments. I'll even say war and threats of war. So it's the truthers, it's the conspiracy theorists' dream come true. If you study it, you see all the elements and exactly how they write their playbook. You'll recognize those patterns over and over again in every area.
Quinn is just stunning how, if you made a list of the all-time great conspiracy theories, virtually every single one is true. We didn't go to the moon. 9/11 was an inside job. JFK was taken out by a conspiracy. Actually, there were 8 different shooters. Just again and again, and here's one of the oldest and most enduring, that fluoride is poisoning us, that it's, whether or not it's part of a communist plot per se, it certainly is part of a plot. I have no doubt really about that. So in many ways, we're just seeing a vindication one after another of the conspiracy theories. I've previously published that they want to silence us because we're investigating crimes that lead back to them. So, of course, they don't want to allow it to go forward. But, that's the case. The government's committing all these crimes and then using the power of the government and cooperation of the media to suppress the truth. This is as stunning an example, I think, as we could have, especially with regard to this latest massive revelation that there is no safe level of fluoride in our drinking water, no level that is safe.
Yeah, that should put the nail in the coffin, but there's been too many times that things have been officially determined and it hasn't worked to end fluoridation. That's why I need to remind people that the ultimate power comes down to we the people. We can't just sit here and talk about fluoride and how bad it is and be ho-hum or worrisome, wringing our hands, saying how horrible it is. We have to do something about it. We are the ultimate ones to control things. When things go awry in our land, it's up to us to rectify them. And that's why I wrote the book, Something in the Water, 12 Steps to Ending Fluoridation in Your Town, is to empower you to get up and do something about it. Even if you're a novice, once again, even if you don't know yourself as political, even if you don't like to think about getting involved in politics, and trust me, this is a different kind of politics. This isn't ordinary politics, but you have to be very creative and very you have to be very committed, and that's the book equips you to take up that and fulfill on your desire to end fluoridation in your town and not simply talk about how bad it is.
Clint, you've just done a wonderful job. I'm very, very impressed. Tell people where they can find your book. I presume it has not yet been banned by Amazon.com.
It's on Amazon, indeed. And you can just do a search for Something in the Water, 12 Steps, and you'll find it there. You can always contact me at info at fluoridefreecampaigns.com. You can also go to fluoridefreecampaigns.com and sign up for our monthly teleconference, video conference, where fluoride-free activists from all over the world are continuing to share their experience, their wisdom, their inspiration together. As we go through the 12 steps, one step each month. And if you join there, you'll start to receive emails, and then there'll be links to the book as well. But Amazon.com. And if you don't want to use Amazon, there's another publisher that's not Amazon. And if you prefer, I can send a link to that.
Yeah, tell us about the alternative publisher, because it's like boycotting Target or Bud Light or whatnot. I think this is going to fall in a similar category. Amazon, by the way, has banned six of my books. Six. About Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, even the moon landing. I mean, Clint, it's just outrageous how the government has used these private companies as agents of the state in order to bribe us of freedom of speech on the ground that it's not the government doing it directly, but it's a violation of our freedom of speech, freedom of the press, nonetheless. Your final thoughts here.
It's called The Book Patch, and you can go to The Book Patch and again search for Something in the Water, 12 Steps Ending Fluoridation in Your Town. And I really do encourage people to get political. You'll love the mission that it is. You'll love to, the people that you'll be with. Fluoride-free activists are some of the best people in the world, the most integrity. They're very educated. Clint, they're very articulate.
Clint, I can't thank you enough. The break is rolling. You and I can't hear it, but it was a sensational job. My great pleasure to have you as my guest today. I can't thank you enough.
Likewise, thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global